Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 113, recorded on December 21st, 2010. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iPhone, iPod, Touch, App Store, iPad, and everything in between. I'm Michael Johnston, and here with me, as always, is Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael. How are you today?
I'm delightful, except for a little bit lightheaded because I haven't really eaten anything today.
Oh, that's going to make for an awesome show.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was shooting for. So
excellent.
Yeah. Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Hanging out.
Did either of you get a chance to watch the attempt to roll Discovery back to the vehicle assembly building?
Oh, no, I forgot. Didn't. This is This Week in Space.
Yeah, this is This Week in Space. We always open with some random thing. I think we've all established that we didn't see the lunar eclipse, which, although I, you know, honestly, I was up for it, so I watched it live via webcam.
Now, to be fair, you couldn't be bothered to actually look out a window.
No, I would have actually looked outside if I, you know, if it wasn't completely overcast. But yeah, you know, it's 2010, so we have to, you know, watch the sky over the internet.
That was my problem. I saw some astronomer on the Today Show today, and he apparently had tweeted out that something about it being the most boring, I want to say terrestrial, but that's wrong, astrological event ever.
Wow. Can I go on record saying he's a douche?
Yeah.
He was more, and I didn't quote him properly, but it was more... He was just saying it's so slow. It happens so slowly compared to other events. You know, it like, I guess the whole eclipse, if you watch the whole thing, is like 3 hours long.
Yeah.
So he was more referring to the fact that it just is one of those events that kind of crawls along. And you're like, okay, come on. You really just want to see the full part, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it kind of repeats itself afterwards. So you see it on one side of the moon and then it goes the other way. Yeah. So I kind of got his point.
Yeah, I think you should probably, next time it rolls around, you should plan a party around the eclipse. So just like have a party outside and occasionally you'll look up to the sky and then, you know, drink some more.
Yeah, you got to see the, you got to be able to see it though. And that was my problem is we're completely drowning. So.
Well, that's fun. We should talk. Hey, did you guys see the... you know, to the iPhone news, did you see Adobe's presentation of, I believe it's called Adobe Max. It's a new API for playing back video using Flash Player. They're claiming that you get up to a tenfold improvement in CPU usage. And I watched the video.
Is that new? I thought they already had something called Adobe Max. Are they
it's a conference
reusing?
They do.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I'm just
confused.
Throwing words together.
Well, I'm like, are they reusing their marketing and their branding? They just killed their. They had a media player. Did you know that? I thought that was what the Adobe Max thing was their media player, but that was something else.
Yeah,
that was a different thing. And Adobe Max is not what the enhanced supposedly Flash thing.
It's stage video, right?
Yeah, he just talked about this. At Adobe Max.
Right. Yeah, so it's Flash Player 10.2. It's currently in beta, and it uses this thing called Stage Video, which provides this intense improvement in video playback performance. And the part of the video that I saw was where he demonstrated playing, I think it was like a 720p video. Was it 720p? Something like that. On an 11-inch new MacBook Air. And it used about 80% of the CPU. But then when he flicked the magic switch to turn on the new Stage Video API, the CPU went down to like 10%.
You know, I have a really hard time getting excited about this because the hardware that they were demoing this on is not hardware that they didn't have access to before the MacBook Air came out. So why couldn't they have done this months ago or years ago?
No, they have been working on it. The point isn't that it works on a MacBook Air. The point is that they've been working on this in performance with regard to flash video. So they were also showing it off on a Windows computer. But the idea is that with certain types of video, once you have Flash Player 10.2 on your computer, it will automatically use this new API for playing back video and will give you a substantial performance increase, which, of course, is one of the major reasons why we don't see Flash on an iOS device, because it just uses so much CPU and, you know, of course, drains the battery. So I think there's potential for, you know, Adobe's finally seemingly getting it together. And there is hope for Flash on an iOS device if this trend continues and they actually get that kind of performance out of this.
Excuse me. Yeah, clearly that has me all choked up. You know, I hope that they really can improve performance and stability with Flash, because they've been working very hard to cut support for any other multimedia format out of the Creative Suite development applications. So they're really forcing people to develop content just with Flash. So they need to do something to make it more reasonable for people to run Flash content on their devices. So if what they demoed really works the way they're claiming when it officially rolls out, okay, that could potentially be a good thing. And I'm just a little cynical about the whole Flash thing, and I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you can get a hold of the beta version right now. If anyone wants to, you can get a hold of that and try it out. I haven't yet, but I do plan to do that and see if it actually does work as they say. But supposedly it should just magically work on stuff like YouTube videos and other, flash-based web video.
I thought it required some programming changes on the part of developers or something like that. And so I popped on it to look at some of the requirements, and it doesn't look like it actually does.
Right.
But one interesting thing that's mentioned is, for anybody who knows about this Flash stuff, it says that you do need to make sure the video will be available using they recommend using the W mode direct. Do you know about the W mode, Michael?
No.
Okay, so W mode, if you've ever been on a site and there's an embedded Flash thing and you go to do like a rollover or some sort of layered HTML5 kind of thing, and the layer is under the Flash object or the video. If you ever had that happen, if you've ever been on a website and you pulled a drop down menu and it suddenly goes behind like a Flash banner ad or something like that.
Oh, I see.
What's going on is they didn't set the W mode. Typically, it has to be, I think, transparent, if I'm remembering my coding properly.
So what does this W mode do? It handles the layer on which
I think it's called like the window mode or something like that. And I'm guessing that maybe direct means that it has full access to the GPU. Because the way they optimize this stuff is with Direct3D and OpenGL. So Direct3D on Windows and OpenGL on Mac or Linux, which, to Jeff's point, is exactly right. I mean, that technology's been around forever. So why has it taken so long for them to optimize for those technologies? I don't know. But then I read further, so it says they're recommending WMode Direct, but that on modern browsers like Safari 4 and Internet Explorer 9 that have other technologies that are layered between the GPU and the browser, so specifically in the case of Mac's Core Animation, I guess then you can still use the transparent mode, which is a good thing for somebody like a web developer like me, because without that, typically your Flash doesn't respect the z-indexing layers or the z-indexing value for your layered objects in HTML.
Yeah.
Now, okay, just to make sure that I'm not misinterpreting part of what you were saying there, because some of the underlying coding stuff that goes along with Flash, it's lost on me. So right. with the optimization that you were talking about and taking advantage of specific platform features, is the implication then that as a developer, you could optimize your Flash content for specific platform and a specific browser on that platform?
No, it doesn't look like that. That's okay. What I thought. Like when I first heard about this, announcement came out kind of last week, or there were hints that they were going to announce this last week. And I had read one article had kind of alluded that, this only works if you have a really new computer and the latest, GPU or whatever. But so as you guys were talking about this, because I hadn't really read through it yet, I went to Adobe's website and found an article, and I was just going through it and I looked at the requirements. And essentially, it looks like it automatically is optimized, like Michael was saying, for any computer that is doing Direct3D, which is Windows, and OpenGL, Mac and Linux. The only other requirement that I saw that was a little strange was they want you to use this different mode. And my only concern as a web developer is that traditionally has caused problems. I don't know if that's been fixed. And then it went further on to point out that if you're using OS 10 with core animation, then you really don't have to worry about it. So I have to say, from Adobe's perspective, if all this stuff is true, and like Michael said, we can all go play with it, then, this is a pretty good thing. But back to your point, Jeff, they should have done this, 3 years ago. It's kind of too late. So it's like you hear this. My only thing on this story was it's like, all right, you guys took too long. Everybody's already moved on. Everybody's gone to HTML5, so I don't know if this is enough to kind of save Flash video on the web. I think, many sites are just like, and they're done that, we're doing this now.
I could see where, I could see where from a video playback standpoint, this will keep Flash moving forward. But I think on the user interface side of things, I think Adobe ultimately is going to lose that battle because, Flash in many cases is completely the wrong platform to use, especially now that we have all these touch devices, and not just from Apple, but from all kinds of companies, and trying to code a Flash interface for all these different types of devices, I think is going to turn into a nightmare. So, yeah, I think HTML5 will be the interface of the future on the web, and Flash will become more of just a media playback tool.
Yeah, see, I'm continuing to read through this article, and I'm noticing they're kind of showing that one of the differences, too, is your video used to sit on the same layer as the Flash stage, and I guess the reason this is called stage video is now it's rendering and sitting at a lower level, more in line with the underlying hardware and the CPU. So they're kind of showing the video layer playing in essence under what they're calling the Flash display stage, which is what would have your controls that interact with the video and stuff like that. So I look at this stuff and I go, well, how is this different than why do we need the little Flash layer on top of it just to give us control buttons when the operating system also can provide those things?
Oh, because it's not about providing an efficient system for delivering content to you. It's about maintaining the brand. And Adobe has so much invested in Flash.
Right.
I mean, they sank an ass load of money into buying up Macromedia and then continuing to develop all of these tools, and they want to really win big time with their investment.
Well, I think that it also could help with backwards compatibility for those websites which have not adopted H.264, HTML5 video. That's only assuming that Android and iOS actually adopts this version of Flash, which, it's unlikely that will happen, but it is you know, a good step in the right direction if Apple is still, or Google is still considering doing that. And I would say that Google is probably going to be the one, if either of them, I mean, Google is already using Flash on some of the Android platforms, right?
Yes.
So I think that, you know, it, at the very least, it will, it'll provide, needed performance increases to those Android platform devices which have Flash.
Yeah. See, I don't know. Yeah. I'm more interested in stuff that like Adobe did with their HTML5 video player widget. Yeah, for video, I think that's the way they should be going, where, you know, they put out this widget thing that you could get as a web developer and you could embed in your site, and then it would deliver HTML5 video and then gracefully roll back to Flash if Flash was installed. Or roll forward, probably, because Flash is installed on most browsers. And that seemed like a better approach to me, because that's great. A developer can still put Flash video on their site, but then when a non-supported device comes on board, well, guess what? They get HTML5 video. I mean, I think that's a better way for them to go than trying to just continue to hold on to Flash as a video player format.
Yeah.
But just my two cents.
But they'll keep holding on.
Yeah.
Oh, of course they will.
All right. Yep. We've killed this.
Yeah, we have. All right. So moving on to iBooks. There's been an iBooks update pushed out, which includes collections, the ability to print PDFs, and a different stain in the wood, I believe.
Don't forget the improved support for illustrated books.
Oh yes, that's probably the most important part, right?
Well, the illustrated books and the ability to print from PDF. Those are the two big features for me.
Yeah, and print your notes. Did you know that?
Oh really? Okay,
yeah, so
now it's even cooler.
Yeah, if you're in a book, you can now print or email your notes along with page references and stuff like that. So if you've added notes to a book, so I would imagine that'd be something very useful for someone who's a student or something like that. You kind of get the synopsis of everything that you've highlighted and noted.
Yeah.
I can see where that will be amazingly useful in school.
Yeah. Yeah. So with regard to the illustrated books, the iBook store, has that always had some illustrated books in there, or are they new with this version?
No, it supported illustrated books, and there were definitely books with illustrations in them or graphics in them. From what I understand, excuse me, the big difference now is that iBooks can handle, I'm assuming it's additional XML code that can be included in the EPUB file, so that you have better positioning of your graphics and you can maintain a look that more closely matches your printed piece. Because without that, graphics just kind of flow in line.
Right.
Right.
And they're going to break where they break. Well, you won't break a graphic across two pages, but if a graphic can't fit all in one page, then it jumps to the next page. So you might end up with like four lines of text, empty space, and then a page with a graphic on it.
Yeah. Where this really, you can really see this is if you go in and you look at the kids' books.
Yes.
Kids' books before, you would have, you know, text, and then you would have an illustration kind of at the top, but it was always in white. And now they have a bunch of children's books where the text is layered on top of the graphics. So why they couldn't do that before is probably, like Jeff said, probably something to do with the EPUB format needing to be extended to kind of support more of an illustrative kind of book, or and this makes a big impact in, I guess, photo books as well. So,
yeah, well, yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, the EPUB file format, it's actually a zip file with a bunch of stuff in it, and
right.
one of the things that's in there is your CSS content, and so I think a lot of what's changed, at least it makes sense that this is what it would be. And if I'm wrong, whoever corrects me, thank you. But I'm assuming that the update to iBooks can now properly handle a lot of that extra CSS data for formatting so that you can get the graphics to sit properly and have the text overlay the way you want it to. Whereas before, it would just ignore that. I mean, you can put all kinds of information about fonts and stuff in your EPUB file, but for the most part, ebook reader apps just completely ignore that it's there. So maybe what iBooks is doing now is honoring a lot of that other CSS data that's tucked away in that EPUB file. Did I just go deeper into EPUB than we wanted to?
No, that was good. I didn't know that about EPUB stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool if you grab an EPUB book or a book from the iBook store. I think you can do the classic, you know, right click or control click and show package contents, and you can kind of root around in there and you can see like the XML and the structure, and there's a lot of good documentation online how to actually, you know, put together your own EPUB. And then you basically just, like Jeff said, you get a certain files in certain locations, the images go in a certain place, and you structure it right, and then you just zip it up and give it a .epub extension, and whoa, you've got an EPUB book.
Yeah, there's cool. A little bit more to it than that. And the only reason I'm saying right. that is because there are people out there that right now heard that and went, no, it's more. So now they understand
okay.
that we both know it's more.
Yes, I was simplifying it for
the people,
the rest of us.
Yeah, for the people that are actually, there's blood coming out of their ears right now, and they're thinking, talk about something else now.
Well, we can do that.
Cool. I like the EPUB format.
EPUB thing is very cool.
Yeah, I just wish there were more tools. Although I haven't played around with Pages. You know, Pages can write out EPUBs. So,
yeah,
I need to mess with that some more.
Yeah, and InDesign's actually really good at EPUBs also. And there's some really cool tools out there that you can use if you need to go in and mess around with your CSS before you actually publish or distribute your ebook. And there's some really good reasons why you would want to muck around with the CSS. Just opening up the EPUB file and going in there and dicking around will probably break things that you don't want to break.
Oh, yeah.
So instead of just ripping it open and going in, you're better off getting one of the applications that can actually look inside the file, pull out the one piece you need to mess around with, and put it back in without actually unzipping everything.
Yeah. All right. So do we want to talk about the daily? So according to All Things Digital, they say that it will be released on or announced or launched on January 17th. And for those who don't remember, the daily is the rumored News Corp Apple collaborative project, which will be an application which will allow you to get special news content especially designed for the iPad at a subscription rate of 99 cents per week.
Right. You get content, what, Monday through Friday?
Right.
That sounds right.
Mm-hmm. They also say that it's going to be really multimedia heavy. I think this is a new bit of information, but they say it will include some kind of 3D effect that lots of people are very excited about.
I hope you need red blue glasses.
I hope so too.
Oh, God.
Because I'm going to look so cool in Starbucks when I put those things on.
Oh, I'm just reading news. It's cool. You know, just sitting here reading news, drinking my latte with my 3D glasses on.
if it's a sort of way of navigating, it might be interesting, you know, like threading through the content or something like that. But if it's really like stuff is shooting out of the screen at me, it's like, oh God, can we give that a rest?
No, I'm guessing there won't be actual like red blue 3D type stuff. I think they're talking about some more like traditional 3D graphics on the screen.
Right. On the multimedia side of stuff, you know, I think for print publishing, there really needs to be a balance. So that makes me, I was kind of excited about the project. It makes me a little bit nervous. I'm thinking to some of the other magazine publications that we've seen come out. And, you know, I've played around with a couple of them, Wired and Project from Virgin. And I have to say, Wired did a pretty good job. I think Project kind of took it to the next level. I haven't picked up the new issue. I don't know if I will or not, but I kind of liked how there was a nice balance of readable content, and then the interactive stuff was there and was additive, and but wasn't overpowering. And I think it's too easy on a device like the iPad to put a lot of visual fluff in, and then the text content, which is what you really want a magazine or a newspaper for,
right,
to completely suffer.
You know, and see, that's how Wired has been feeling to me. Like they're taking advantage of of the flashy things just to be able to do it.
Right.
And Popular Science and Project, I think they're doing it much better. And I think Time's doing a good job too. So I guess right now those are my three favorite for the way they're handling the iPad magazine interface style.
I'm gonna have to look at Time. I haven't tried out Time.
See, Time didn't go with let's make it super flashy sort of thing. They made it very readable, and I think they did a really good job of saying, well, you know, we don't need to stick with traditional page styling. So let's take advantage of how you can navigate with your fingers on an iPad without just putting in eye candy for the sake of eye candy.
Yeah. The key to the publishing thing to me, to the iPad being a boon for the print publishing industry, is actually, I think, more driving people back to print. And in order for that to happen, I'm more excited about the fact when the Daily comes out that hopefully we'll have a real subscription model. And ideally, that Apple gives publishers a way to do, hey, if you get the printed thing, you also get the digital thing, even if it's an extra cost. I think we've talked about this on the show in the past, but I really still want, there's certain magazines that I want the printed version. And Wired is doing this kind of neat thing where they have this little icon in the printed version that says, hey, there's more content on this article if you get the digital version. But I'm not going to pay another $5 just for those little whiz-bangy features, because I get the magazine, as I mentioned, for mainly for the content. It's for the text material. That other stuff is additive and it's nice, but it's not what you're buying the thing for, or at least it shouldn't be. And and that is my concern as we move into digital, that we're suddenly, it's going to be all about, well, let's make it like really flashy. Like, well, no, I've got television if I want to see moving pictures. I have YouTube. I have a million other ways to get video. So, you know, do your good writing. That's why I pay for a magazine.
Yeah. Yep. All right, moving on to CES 2010 or 2011, right? January 6th through 9, according to Mac Rumors, Motorola will be at CES demonstrating their tablet, and they produced a video, a teaser video, and it's really dorky, I have to say.
It is terrible.
So the video, if you haven't seen it, depicts a museum hall with various tablets. So you have an Egyptian hieroglyphic tablet, and they say, the text is coming up here. If I can get YouTube. Oh, YouTube doesn't work anymore. That's great. Here we go.
Wait, is it a flash video?
Yes. Good graphics, but weight makes for difficult portability. On the Egyptian hieroglyphic tablet. Tablets of stone, the Ten Commandments, excellent durability, but zero flexibility, can't edit. That's pretty clever. Rosetta Stone, yada yada, multilingual support, but low resolution screen. And they...
that seemed pretty high resolution to me. It was also 3D.
That's true. Mayan engraved tablet, successful Latin American distribution, but rumored 2012 self-destruct feature.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, LOL. Cute. Yeah. So anyway, so it gets to the iPad, and it says, it's like a giant iPhone, but it's like a giant iPhone, which indicates to me that they've never touched an iPad.
Right.
Right.
They're using the circa January last year argument, right?
Yeah, they are. The one where we haven't touched it yet argument.
I would call that circa January 2 years ago.
Uh-huh. And they even talk about the Galaxy Tab, which they describe as an Android, or as Android OS, but Android OS for a phone.
Okay, now in that case, they're actually right, because Google is telling people Android for tablets has not been released yet.
Right.
Right. So what Motorola is touting, or supposedly or ostensibly touting, is that their tablet, even though it's Android-based, will be a an actual tablet version of Android OS. So, you know, if prior announcements from Motorola are any indication, I'm guessing this will be a laugh and a half. But do you guys think that they've actually got something with Google going on? Or do you think they have their own special thing that they've layered on top of Android?
The only thing about all this tablet stuff is, for me, is that we're already, as you know, iPad owners and Mac fans and stuff like that, we're already talking about iPad 2, right? And I look back to the iPhone, and we're still, even this year, I think, is the first year we really saw any, what I would consider even viable alternatives or competitors to the iPhone, right? In the smartphone space. And I know there's people who are going to argue with me, but you know, I really think this year the iPhone started seeing its competition, right? Other phones are starting to gain market share. Android's taking off. It's doing better against iOS, stuff like that. How many years is that? I mean, that's
3 years.
So we're talking four versions of the iPhone, right?
Right. And they're catching up.
And yeah, so, and they're just finally now catching up. Wow.
Right. And I think we're seeing a repeat in this tablet space. We've got these tablets, but they're not even anywhere close to the original iPad. And we've already moved on. We're already like, we're going to the next thing now. You're going to have a new thing you're going to have to chase. And you haven't even gotten to the thing, putting the thing out. So even if it comes out and it rivals the current iPad, it's going to be a year behind the new iPad that's going to be out in April.
Well, we assume so anyway.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So, okay, so the iPad that most likely will be out in April. How's that sound?
Right, yeah.
I think it's going to be out in April, so.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
All right, but let's own it. It's coming out in April.
Yeah, I'm going to own it. But so that's my thing. It's like, great, okay, you're going to have something that's as good as last year's iPad. Good for you. Yay. Go Motorola. And I don't even think they're going to, and I'm with you, Michael, though, too. I think it's not even going to be close to last year's iPad.
You know, I'm hoping that all these companies that we're hearing about right now for their tablet stuff actually have something at CES we can look at. Because last year was supposed to be the big tablet year. Steve Ballmer set the tone for tablets at CES during his keynote, which was toss them off to the side. Let's move on to the next PowerPoint slide.
Right. We have something too, just like Apple will.
Yeah.
I was going to say, in case anybody's wondering, I really hope I'm wrong. I like competition. I like seeing other devices that are close. I think the iPhone is getting better because the other smartphones on the market are matching up to a lot of its features and stuff like that. And I think it really pushes and drives Apple. I don't want to see them get complacent, but I just haven't seen it yet. So I hope to be proven wrong. I hope Motorola's thing comes out and it's the greatest tablet since sliced bread, or since the iPad. But I have a feeling it's not going to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe we'll be surprised. Maybe Motorola will have something really cool that we can go hands-on with at CES. And maybe we'll actually really get to play with the playbook at CES from RIM.
Yep.
And all these other companies that are coming out with new tablets.
Such as Palm?
Like HP's Palm Pad. And HP. Is that right? Palm Pad.
Yeah, I believe they're calling it the Palm Pad. So according to FoxNews.com, they say that the HP Palm Pad will be introduced at CES 2011, running a modified version, a newer version of WebOS, which will be, assuming for the pad, not for just the phone that's scaled up. They say it's going to be version 2.5.1. It will be based on the never-released HP Slate. In terms of form factor, obviously using WebOS. They say they'll have three different versions. I'm guessing, I don't think they actually said what the differentiating factors would be, but they'd be, you know, fairly minor. They say that it will be running on Sprint's 4G network. It'll have a mini HDMI port, a front and rear camera, and USB 3.0. And I honestly feel like this is going to be the tablet to watch.
You know, I've said it before, so I'll say it again now, because apparently I'm repetitive. I think the company that has the highest likelihood of giving Apple a serious run for its money in the Slate style tablet market is HP with WebOS.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say the other thing in 2011 that I don't think it's going to compete with the iPad, because I think it's a completely different demographic and market. But somebody who I think is going to gain a lot of market share in the tablet space is, frankly, Barnes & Noble with the Nook.
Oh, yeah, the Nook color?
Yeah, because there's this rumor that the new Nook color, which I think it's been hacked to run Android Marketplace stuff, or supposedly they're going to open up Android Marketplace apps for the new color Nook. And
yeah,
I think it's a price point thing. I think it's underpowered, but I think there's going to be a lot of people that just want a simple internet browsing and book reading device, and that price point is just really attractive. And if they throw apps on there, even if it's a limited subset of Android apps, but the casual games and stuff like that most people enjoy, I think they'll gain a lot of market share at that, because it's such a cheap device.
Yeah, they say that the Nook color, I think it is confirmed that they will be getting an update next year, early next year, probably like January, I think, to get app support. And it is $250. So
God, I think there's a crud load of people
that's a good price point
would just like grab it just because it's so cheap.
Yeah. 7-inch screen, but you know.
Yeah, but if you're more focused on the price point, the 7-inch screen isn't going to be as big of a deal for you.
Right.
Especially because the market that most likely will be purchasing that as a tablet alternative is not the market that's going to be looking for the higher horsepower that you get from an iPad or from the Palm Pad.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. You're not going to be playing Infinity Blade on a Nook.
Yeah.
But, but it's a totally different market, and it's going to be the classic thing. It's like Apple doesn't play in that space. They're not. Apple's never probably going to play in the low-cost tablet space. They've carved out their niche, and I think we're going to see a lot in this 7-inch, you know, lower resolution screen, or not as you know, high end in terms of the, I don't know what the screen differences are, not resolution necessarily, but maybe just the underlying display technology. It's not going to be a Retina display, but it's going to appeal to a lot of people who just want that little thing that they pull out at the coffee shop. They can read a book, they can browse through a magazine or a newspaper on it, they can play a round of solitaire, and surf the web. It's a great little device.
Yeah, and you know, I think for Apple's target market at that price point, they will tell you, well, we already have our smaller screen tablet for you to mess with at that price point. It's called an iPod Touch.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right, so let's move on. This is an interesting story. I think we skipped it a few weeks ago, but the SEC began investigating various
insider trading.
Well, insider
the channel partners,
right? The channel partners, from the various financial groups, the financial analysts who come out with these various reports about, you know, Apple doing this or that, and we always think, you know, where are these guys getting information? And they always say, well, channel check. So they check the channels. What does that mean? Well, the SEC has been investigating that, and they've actually made some arrests with regard to, you know, various companies before it was there was nothing related to Apple yet. However, they say that they have arrested one person with connections to, I believe, one of the companies who does manufacturing for Apple. They
Flextronics.
Flextronics, yes.
Yeah, they're here in San Diego.
Yeah, they say that. So they have two recordings from this guy to a cooperating witness from about 8 months ago, where this guy was heard saying, basically talking about the iPhone 4, talking about various very specific details with the iPhone 4. And obviously this person has signed an NDA and is working with Apple and should not be divulging this information, especially for money.
Yeah.
So Walter Shimoon, or Shimoon, something like that, from Flextronics, is the first one they arrested for the insider information sharing. And it seems that they're continuing to investigate this stuff, which I think is good. You know, if I was in Apple's position, I would certainly not want my partners to be giving out this information to people who I don't want knowing about it. Right. And this could be, you could attribute a lot of this or a lot of the, it seems like there've been a lot more leaks in the past few years than in the past with regard to Apple stuff.
Well, part of the thing with this whole channel check thing, there's, companies that broker out information from people in companies that are willing to give it up for money.
Right.
That's just crazy. Well, that's capitalism, I guess, but it's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure how much we have to say about that.
Stealing's wrong, kids. Don't steal.
Yeah, you're going to get caught. or maybe the bigger message is don't get caught.
That is the bigger message.
Yeah.
Stealing is wrong, kids. Don't get caught.
Yeah,
how exactly. Was that?
Yeah, there you go. All right. So according to Apple, we're going to see the Mac App Store on January 6th.
And, yes, we are. Which coincides with the first day of CES.
Correct, yeah.
Now, I don't know if there's a correlation there. But
any coincidence?
Apple is not into coincidence. So,
right.
It makes you wonder just what all Apple has in store. Because if they're going to launch this on January 6th, knowing full well it's the first real day of CES, also being hours after Steve Ballmer wraps up his CES keynote, just kind of wondering if we're going to have a little surprise.
I'm having a tough time thinking, that there will be a big surprise.
Same here, but Apple isn't into coincidence.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very meticulous with their planning.
And it's not like they're bumping up to the end of the 90-day release window, right? They have like 2 weeks past that to release this. So they could
just because they promised 90 days doesn't mean they have to deliver in 90 days.
Sure, yeah, they could wait 2 weeks. They could wait 5 weeks. But it does appear that they do want to attempt to steal some thunder from CES.
It seems reasonable, but without any additional information, I'm just kind of waiting to hear what happens.
Yeah. They are also, have they completely shut down the download listings, or is it still in progress?
I thought that was still in progress.
Okay. So if you guys don't know, those of you listening, Apple actually has a page on their website which lists really any developer's application. It's been there for many, many, many years. And yep. Honestly, I'm having a tough time finding it right now.
The easiest way, Michael, on your Mac, this is a tip for everybody.
Oh,
go
Apple
under
menu?
Your Apple menu.
Mac OS X software.
Yes. Third item down, Mac Boom. OS X software will take you right there.
Well, thanks for the tip.
And now it takes you right to apple.com downloads instead of that dedicated Mac software page.
Yeah.
Yeah. If right. you want to get to the dedicated Mac software page, on the left, you'll see there's a little menu and it says all downloads.
Mm-hmm.
You hover over that, it'll expand open and you can click on all categories, and that goes to downloads Mac OS X, which I think was the old or the existing page that's Mac OS 10 software downloads.
You know, the sad thing for me about that going away is that I used to go and hunt for Automator Actions and iCal calendars there.
Yep.
So
two
losing,
really good categories.
Yeah, losing those.
Are they actually getting rid of those?
Do we know this is going away? I mean, do we know this page? I mean, I would imagine that the underlying content behind this is exactly a lot of it's exactly the same stuff that will end up being in the App Store. And being that the App Store or the iTunes Store are all just HTML5 and CSS based anyway, it seems like they could just put a bit flag in the database and say, okay, this is in the store, this isn't in the store. And by the sheer fact that not everything from every developer is going to be in the Mac App Store, I don't see why this page would have to go away.
Well, I think they want to minimize confusion between the two, but there are a lot of things like
using here except us.
Well, yeah, and now all of our faithful listeners.
Yeah, where's the confusion?
Well,
the average person's going to use the app,
right?
And the people in the know are going to know, oh, I need Automator Actions. I need to go to this page.
Right. I'm guessing they won't get rid of the pages which have Automator Actions and widgets and stuff.
I would hope not.
Well,
unless they're telling developers they need to roll those into the Mac App Store.
In which case, I guess it'd be fine.
Are they going to, in the Mac App Store, list apps that aren't available for purchase on the Mac App Store? So where you can go and it says, oh, you have to get this from the developer's website?
No, I don't
believe
so.
And then click a link.
I doubt it.
Oh. Yeah, so what about all of those apps that just for various reasons are never going to be in the App Store?
Well, and there are things like drivers, which are listed here, which, you know, aren't apps, or, you know, Automator Actions, which aren't apps, and widgets
and all
that. Spotlight
plugins.
Sure, yeah, those are all other things. So I'm hoping we won't see this page be completely removed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it probably will.
Yeah.
Knowing Apple, they'll take it down.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. The last thing we have here today, according to Apple Insider, Apple has posted a job listing, I think four job listings on their website, looking for folks with experience in, what was it? Navigation software. So it seems that Apple might be looking to get into the turn-by-turn navigation applications.
I think Apple is looking to get into the map and turn-by-turn and that whole entire thing.
Yeah, well, they...
What was that company Apple bought months ago that does all that map overlaying stuff?
PlaySpace?
PlaySpace. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And that was in... July 2009, and they've actually purchased Poly9 as well. That mapping firm.
But I think this might be a lot of, you know, back pocket kind of stuff.
Sure.
Where, you know, hey Google, if you ever give us a raw deal, we'll just, you know, we got our own thing. We can do it ourselves. I have mixed feelings about it, I guess, is what I'm saying, because I like Google Maps and I like a lot of the Google technologies, but we're not getting the latest and greatest Google stuff either, right?
Right. Yeah, they have the Google turn-by-turn directions for free available for Android phones, but, you know, although they said that they would initially give that to the iOS platform, they, I believe, said that they never said that.
So, yeah, you know, there's all that kind of stuff going on. So I think Apple's smart to be kind of hedging its bets and have a team in place to say, and technologies in place to say, look, we can roll our own thing.
Sure.
If we really want to. Google kind of has the branding, though, that I think really helps sell iPhones. So if Apple does come out with their own sort of mapping and turn-by-turn offering, it's going to have to be rock solid. And at least, at the very least, in looking what they're acquiring and picking up, it seems like these are companies and people, especially, that really know their stuff. So if Apple does decide to put out its own thing, it's probably going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah. Now, I guess that they have these companies and the people for that. It's not entirely impossible that they could have this thing ready for, you know, the next iPhone release. But if it's, yeah. It does seem a little bit too early if they're still looking for software developers.
You know, I think Apple doesn't want to have to reinvent the wheel if they don't have to, right. Is what it comes down to. If they can continue licensing from Google and getting the kinds of deals and stuff that they want, but I think they also like to know that they're in the driver's seat and they're not beholden to some other company. Should they not like the terms or not like what's going on, and they can just simply flip a switch. And I think they're always kind of prepared to do that. I think they've done that historically with even Adobe.
Yeah. Well,
even with hardware.
Yeah.
I mean, we're using Intel chips now.
Yeah, and true.
And they were prepared at any moment to jump to Intel as soon as they started working on Mac OS X, pretty much.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, I think it comes out in those negotiations. You know, when they were working with IBM, and you heard all those stories about things getting kind of steadily worse and worse and worse in that relationship, and it got strained to a point. And Apple went, well, fine, we're flipping the switch now, and oh, by the way, we've been already working on this for 10 years, so we're ready to go.
Right, and IBM and Motorola were sitting there going, "What?"
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they could do that with Google with the mapping and the turn-by-turn stuff at this point. I don't know that they're going to, but
do you think that Apple is interested in producing a turn-by-turn application, because Google Maps obviously doesn't do turn-by-turn on the iPhone?
Again, I think as long as there's third-party apps and they've got support from, you know, you've got Garmin, you've got TomTom, you've got all the major players in turn-by-turn making apps, Apple needs its engineers to work on other things. And it's not like these people that they're hiring, these companies that they're acquiring, they can still utilize that technology in improving Apple's implementation of the Google Maps and adding on, you know, so they're,
sure.
I don't think that talent's going to waste, but they also have that talent then in-house for when they need to do their own thing or they need to expand things. So I think it's a win-win for Apple no matter which way you look at it. So it's cool to see them continuing these kinds of acquisitions and investing in these types of technologies.
Yep. All right. So, this isn't in the show notes. Well, it kind of is, but I just removed it. So,
it doesn't really matter. Show notes or not.
Here's the thing. I went to the mall the other day. And checked out the Apple store because we had to, you know, get an iPad replaced or something like that. In the window at the Apple store have you guys seen this frightening Santa Claus thing?
Well, did you see the TV ad?
Well, that's frightening too.
Oh, okay. You kind of have to have the TV ad to put it into context, I would imagine.
I imagine. Well, that's the problem. Is I hadn't seen the TV ad before I saw the scary Santa mannequin in the window.
Well, actually, you mean the mannequin that came out before the commercial? Because the commercial's only been out for a day or two now.
Oh yeah. So there's a scary Santa mannequin in the window at the Apple store, not facing outward, facing into the store where there's actually, you know, a backdrop. And it looks like he's holding on to an iPhone talking with a little girl. And it's just, it's really strange.
Well, that would make sense in the context of the ad.
Right. It would make sense in the context of the ad, which is not included with the scary mannequin.
The question is he giving her the bird?
Oh, Adam.
Jeff knows what I'm talking about. If you go to Apple's site with the ads and look at the keyframe for the ad,
that's actually not the keyframe for the ad. Actually, is it?
It is. Yes, it is.
They changed it.
It was this morning, Jeff, when we were talking about this. They photoshopped it out.
So now you'll have to go to the screen that I took to see it.
Okay. Yes, I think that's why you ended up with that image, because it was the keyframe on the ad. So there was something in the background they moved it.
Over to the app page to look. All right.
Yes, so. When they put that up, and at least up until this morning.
You're right, his hands in a different place.
He's in kind of a workshop, which I think is a shed or a garage or something like that. And there was a broom handle or, you know, rake handle or something right behind his hand. And the color tone on the two things made them look very similar. And so the broom handle was kind of coming out of the middle of his hand where he was holding the iPhone.
Oh, nice.
And especially in the thumbnail versions of the image, which was the one right on the homepage.
Right.
You couldn't really tell.
It just kind of looked like that's hilarious.
It looked like he was giving everybody the bird.
You know, and it's funny because when I did my screenshot to get a photo for my article about the commercial, I was just kind of scrubbing through the ad to find a good shot of Santa. And I went, oh, I like that one. Took a screenshot and then went, oh, it's going to look a little muddy. So I went and adjusted the color and brightness levels. And when I did, it changed it really made that whatever it is behind his hand stand out. So it really looks like he's flipping everyone off. It's awesome.
So go about 8 seconds into the video and you'll see it. So pull it up on Apple's website. It's their iPhone gallery ads.html page, and go up, scrub about 8 seconds into the ad and you'll see it.
And if you're having trouble with that, just go look at my article at Mac Observer. Because I, without even realizing it, managed to get a perfect screenshot of Santa apparently giving Android a fine salute.
Yeah. And I think with that, we have to move on to our picks, right?
Do we?
Yeah, I think it's time. Jeff?
All right. So I was looking at my Santa photo. I'm really pleased with how that turned out. All right, so my pick this week is, in many people's minds, this will be a news-related app. Other people see it as a comedy app. The Daily Show has an application for the iPad out now.
Ah.
Yeah, and so when you hop into the app, you can check out quotes from The Daily Show, and so it's just kind of... like this big long strip that you can flip through and see screen or still frames from Daily Show episodes, and then it'll flip and show the quote that's associated with that. When you select it, you know, just by tapping, you can see the video that the quote comes from. You can also look for interesting content from The Daily Show in kind of this cloud looking thing. Based on topics, and you can sort by the guests they've had on the show, the different correspondents, things that have turned out to be really popular on the show, and it also does a schedule of who's going to be on different episodes. So if there's someone that you want to see interviewed and they show up in the list, you can even have it give you a reminder. An hour or something like that ahead of the show airing so that you can go watch.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's a really well done app. It's a Daily Show. And so much of what Jon Stewart does is just brilliant. So there you go. Now you can get right at it on your iPad, which otherwise you wouldn't have been able to do, because all of the content that Comedy Central has on their website is Flash-based. And they want to do all... So, and if you have locked down Flash so that websites can't just like grab all kinds of data from your computer and store anything they want on your computer, you can't see any of it at all. So this is a nice way to be able to watch the content, be able to do it wherever you are, and it's presented in a really fun or slick interface. And it's free.
Oh, it's free?
Yeah.
Because the one I'm looking at is $2.
Really?
What do you get for $2?
Maybe they were doing like a promo thing where they're giving it away for free.
Yeah, I'm looking at The Daily Show. The icon is Jon Stewart, looking kind of cool.
Yeah.
And some of the screenshots have John Hodgman and a guy in a green suit.
Hold on, I'm hopping over to look it up right now. And apparently my computer is being a total bitch to me tonight. Wow, okay, so it's $2 now. Apparently the free thing was when it first launched.
Ah.
And now it's $2. But it's a universal app, so you can buy it once and watch content on your iPhone or your iPad. You know, I would have paid $2 for it.
So you can actually watch video from The Daily Show on there.
Yeah.
Cool. So like entire episodes or just clips?
It's little clips. So like minute long clips. And you'll end up seeing like little still frames that have an ad as the clip is loading.
Gotcha.
So the clips or the ads in the clips are not obtrusive because you have to sit there and wait for the clip to load anyhow. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Cool. All right, Adam, what is your pick?
You know what? I didn't think I was going to do this one, but I have been using this more and more. Do you guys use Basecamp?
No.
For anything? So no. If you are a Basecamp, you know what Basecamp is?
Vaguely.
Okay. It's basically a project management service from, now I'm going to forget the name of the company.
Like 320 or something like that, or 640.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the company, but it is actually really cool.
I'm just blurting
it's
out.
It's probably because I have this cool app. It's probably the reason why, because I never go to the web interface anymore. So it started out as online project management software and tool for managing projects. And the reason I have it is that I'm a member of the Mac Roundtable, and the Mac Roundtable has a Basecamp that we use to keep track and kind of keep in touch and schedule shows and figure out what we're going to talk about, and then just generally go back and forth. 37 Signals.
Yep.
God, I can't believe I couldn't remember them. They're a great company, and they make great products. And so I've used Basecamp for a while, and I had been looking for something for the iPhone and the iPad, and I had an app that I kind of liked, but it always kind of felt pieced together. It didn't really feel iOS-like, and everybody here knows that I'm really into very nice, pretty-looking apps. And I found this one called Headquarters. And they have a light version, which I think is free, or I know is free, because that's the one I'm using. I believe the limitation is that it just lets you connect to one project. If some people, you know, have multiple projects that they're involved in with Basecamp, there is a paid version, and I'll look up the price here in a second, or maybe you can, Michael, while I run through this. But it basically just gives you an iPhone style interface for all of the different aspects within Basecamp. So you can look at to-dos and add to-dos. You can check out different scheduled events, as they call them, milestones in Basecamp. Has support for the files. So if you're sharing files through Basecamp and any file that the iOS device supports, so PDFs and Word docs and stuff like that, you can view, you can print them out now with it has AirPrint support, so you can print them out. You can move them to other applications like GoodReader or iBooks. And then also mostly what I use it for is the messages. So it's sort of like threaded discussions and stuff like that. It's mostly what we're doing on Basecamp with Mac Roundtable. And it's just a really nice looking app. You know, when you bring up the messages, they look like little layered, like it does in mail, like little stacks of papers and stuff like that. You get the avatar icons and stuff like that, so you can tell who's in the conversation, and you can add to it. So it's full functionality on the iPhone, iOS for Basecamp projects. And it's, like I said, the light version is free. So if you only have a one project that you're dealing with, it works great. And if you want to pay for it, I want to say it's $9.99 or $4.99.
What's the app?
It's $4.99.
$4.99. Thank you. It's called Headquarters and Headquarters Lite.
Ah, okay.
And Lite is free.
Yep. And Lite is free. And I believe the limitation is one project.
Cool.
One account, I guess, is what. One account, one project. So if you have multiple accounts or need to manage multiple projects, you got to buy the $5 app. But it's a really nice looking app, and it's the best app I've found so far for doing Basecamp on the iPhone.
Now, did you say it's universal?
I don't know if it's. I don't think it's universal. I haven't tried it on the iPad. I mostly do it on my iPhone because the way Basecamp works, it's just project based stuff. So it's quick little notes and stuff like that. I haven't had a need to do it on my iPad, so I hadn't been looking for something for the iPad. But if it's universal, it'd be a bonus. But
it looks it's iPhone only.
Yeah.
So if you want it full screen on your iPad, it's time to pixel dump.
Yep.
Yeah, so I guess anybody out there can do a follow-up. If somebody knows something for Basecamp on the iPad, I'd be interested to know about it. I just haven't, like I said, I haven't gone looking. And sorry if I'm distracted, but somebody is just pinging me in Skype like a million times. Oh, I just got to close a conversation that was open or turn off my alerts.
It's cool. All right. So, but the
you're
the,
popular. It's how
I
it
forgot
goes.
To. I forgot to set do not disturb is what I needed to do.
Yeah.
And like suddenly it's going bloop 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 in my ear. It's just me hearing it. I'm hearing noises again.
Yeah, that's okay. So it's called Headquarters and it's $4.99
or free for the light version.
Correct.
You only have one project.
Yep. All right. So my pick is Starwalk 5. And I feel like we've talked about this. We must have talked about Starwalk. Have we talked about it?
We definitely have.
Yeah, okay.
And it's a cool application.
Oh, yes. I can never... There's two of these apps.
Right,
and I can't remember the one that I have. I don't think it's Starwalk. I think I have the other one.
SolarWalk?
SolarWalk, which, by the way, just got updated.
Oh, cool. Maybe I do have Starwalk.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, I don't want to encroach on your pick.
No, it's cool. So Starwalk is available for the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. The one I'm doing, so there are two separate ones. One for the iPhone, iPod Touch, and then there's one for the iPad. I'm gonna go for the one for the iPhone, and the reason is, to introduce everybody to Starwalk. What it allows you to do you basically have a star map. So you bring up the app, it gives you a whole bunch of information, such as, when the sun's going to rise and set, when the moon's going to come up, where it's going to be, all these things. I think it actually shows you like solar flares and stuff like that. So that's not even close to what the coolest part is. The cool part is you can scroll around and look around at the sky and see all the various celestial bodies out there. But if you tilt your phone up to the sky, and you have to have at least a compass in your phone, so you have to have, the 3G or the 3GS?
3GS, I believe.
Got to have a 3GS or better in order to do this, or it does work with the iPad because that does have a compass. But you point it up at the sky, and suddenly you're seeing exactly what you see in the sky, you're seeing it on your phone. So you can tap on, you're looking up and you see something and you're like, I really wish I knew what star that was up there. So all you do, you point it up and then you tap on the star and then it tells you, oh, okay, this is Vega. Cool. And then you hit the I button and then it tells you all this, information about it. Tells you the background on what the naming and the history of it and what we know about it, etc. It's not just stars; it's also planets, which has been in there for a long time. And new to Starwalk in I believe version 5, it will also allow you to find satellites and the space station with StarWalk. So instead of looking up at the sky and saying, "Oh, I wonder where the space station is," or something like that, you hit the search button, and then you can actually search for, you know, either the space station or whichever star you want or a constellation. So if you type in, I don't think I'm in the right thing. Yeah, space station. Oh, here we go. Satellites. I have to click on satellites. ISS. Tap on that. Boom. Little arrow says, you know, point your phone down here, and there it is. And so it actually shows you the rotation of the sun relative to where you are, as well as the horizon of the Earth. So in this case, the ISS is below us, so I can't actually see it. But you can, you know, tap info and get more information about it. You can actually use you can tap on the clock and accelerate the time. So you can actually go to, you know, 5 days ahead and see where the space station is supposed to be, or where any planet or star is supposed to be relative to your position. And another wonderful feature that was introduced in version 5 is augmented reality mode. So when you're holding it up, your perspective isn't going to be perfect based on, you know, where you're looking in the sky and on the screen. So what you can do is tap on this new little button, and it includes imagery from the camera. So it underlays live video from your camera as you're pointing up, and then that way you can calibrate it. So it's
cool.
So it's exactly the way you're looking at it. So they recommend calibrating to the sun or to the moon, because that's the easiest, and I recommend doing that too. And once you do that, you have a near perfect analysis of what you're looking at. And so if you're, you know, depending on where you are, maybe if you're closer to a city and you can't see as many stars, you can actually adjust how many stars you see on the screen, so you're not distracted by other stars, which you may or may not be able to see. Or if you're in a more rural area where you can see a lot of stars, then you can amp it up and see the rest of the stuff. And it's just, it's really cool. And it even includes space music, so you can turn that on if you need some space music.
Hey, Michael, once you calibrate it, does it lock it, kind of lock its orientation? How does that, I'm curious how that works, because I think the reason this is sounding familiar is way back when, a long time ago, the app I've been using is called Star Map, and I'm always confused between Star Map and Star Walk because they both have an icon that has the Big Dipper on it.
Oh yeah.
But Star Map is a lot more expensive. I paid like $13 for it.
It's $12.
And that always is a problem. It has a lot of the similar features where you can move it around, but that sort of aligning everything up with what you're seeing to what the app is displaying, that sounds like a killer feature.
Yeah, it's helped quite a bit, because, you know, like I said, it's a bit of a problem when you are looking up and you're like, is it that star or is it that star? I'm not really sure what I'm looking at. And this does actually calibrate it. So once you've done that,
it locks into that orientation, so as you move around, it stays with that offset or whatever it might be.
Exactly.
That's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. And it's $3. It's really easy to use, and
I might have to do a head-to-head test.
The other thing I keep forgetting, it also includes constellations. So I have constellations off because I don't traditionally look at constellations, because I just haven't gotten into that yet. So you can turn on and off satellites. Do you know what Telrad is? I'm not sure what that is, but you can turn that on. If you know what that is, you can turn that on. But you can also turn on constellations in the settings. And then that way, it's really cool when the constellations are turned on. So as you're moving your view around the sky, the various outlines of the constellations brighten up and become visible as you pass across them. So as you're moving your phone across the virtual sky, the various constellations light up. And you can even search for constellations too.
Very
so
cool.
So it's awesome. And like I said, it's only $3. You should just go get it. It's awesome. And it's called StarWalk, two words. And with that, I will say that you can find the show notes, as well as our iPhone picks at wehavecommunicators.com. So once you get to the website, just click on the episode number for which you want to find the notes or picks. You'll see all that there. You can also comment on each individual episode with discuss. So if you have a Twitter or a discuss or a Gmail or what have you account, you don't have to create a new login. Just log in, post a comment. It's really cool. And you can also send us feedback using the email address feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And Jeff Gamet, of course, is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, twitter.com/jgamet. His wonderful drawings are on various items at cafepress.com/jgamet. And in addition to those sorts of items, you can also find the We Have Communicators mug on zazzle.com/jgamet.
And it looks really cool. Mine showed up. I love it. And so everyone that's bought them so far, thank you. You guys rock.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen a lot of pictures of people twittering about their mug that they got. It's really cool.
Oh, we got to set up that gallery page. Did somebody set up a Flickr group?
A Flickr thing? Yeah, I did not, and I haven't heard. I assume someone would tell me.
I'm going to do it right now.
Okay. All right. So Adam Christensen from the MacCast at MacCast.com is doing that. And of course, you can find him on Twitter at twitter.com/MacCast and the member version of the MacCast at member.maccast.com.
Yep.
You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, as well as my Little Reviews page. So it's LIL Reviews, so Little Reviews. And that's where I post reviews of, I would say mostly food, but sometimes movies and beer and stuff like that, you know, whatever I like or don't like. You know, if I think it's important that I say that something sucks, then I'll put it there. But the last thing I put up,
seems
I think,
reasonable.
Was Satsumas, which are delicious little oranges. I'll just say right here, because you guys listen to the show, that they're good. So check those out. Check out Satsumas, check out Little Reviews, and check out my Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators. All right, here's an update for the episode. Adam has just created a Flickr group for showing off your We Have Communicators mug. It's the Show Us Your We Have Communicators mug group on Flickr. So check out flickr.com/groups/WHC mug. And when you get your mug, post your pictures there so we can share them.
I just joined the group.
Awesome.
What are we going to do? Cool. Oh, a stylus, right? We're gonna use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away, and you lose them. Yuck.